O magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It's Wednesday. It's August 12th, 2015. And I'll begin reading out of 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. But in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. Oh, I just love that verse. But I was almost thinking, Jason, that I should have began with that verse. Is it Elijah or Elijah, where the Lord speaks to him through the rushing wind and through, or there's all those things, but then it comes through the whisper. And I was thinking, in light of Bob's testimony yesterday of how God used a number of weather circumstances, hurricanes and such, to bring Mary into his life, and how she's been that companion, that helpmeet, as he's been writing so many blogs about unraveling Islam and addressing the topic of Islam, that it just kind of seemed appropriate to have that verse. I can't remember where that passage is, but where God often speaks through a whisper, not through these great dramatic ways. It's sometimes a very still, quiet voice through the reading of his scripture.
Yeah, I think that's why the Bible calls us to be silent, to be slow to speak, so that we can be quick to listen to what the Spirit is saying. And I just love that testimony you shared yesterday, Bob, because just this idea that God is sovereign over all things, that he uses all things for his glory to bring us together, and that, I don't know, just in the short time I've gotten to know you, Bob, there's some similarities, I think, always to those people that God gifts and God calls forward to do ministry. And one of those things is that we're kind of pioneers, and pioneers are always really bad at counting wagon wheels and remembering to bring water. And so God partners us with people who are very good at that, and how you've said that Mary helps with editing, and that my wife helps often with editing and with saying, wait a second, and let's pull back and let's say this a way that everybody in the room can hear it, not just two people. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's so powerful how God does that, because God sees our weaknesses and then he gives us strength. And sometimes that strength comes through the people that he aligns us with, whether it's friends, coworkers, or even spouses.
Well, that's exactly right. And so my wife, Mary, is very complimentary to me in that I am more of that pioneer type person, and she's more of the planner. Wait, how is this going to happen? How are we really going to pull this off, right? And so that's really good, because, and I just love that about her, that she's able to keep me on task, but more importantly say, wait a minute, you know, you can't really go do this or say this because this piece isn't in place yet, or this part could be better positioned over here. And so it's great how God does put people together like that, where you can really not be the same, but be very complimentary.
A word that you used, I think, over all four of your programs when we talked about the homosexuality and biblical marriage, that
complementarianism,
that
God creates two halves to make a greater whole. And so the man and the woman together are a greater together than they are apart. That God knows the man needs a helper. And my wife likes to point that verse out all the time, that you need a helper, and that's me, and I'm here to help you. But really, not in a way that makes me, belittles me, but it actually frees me, because she, like I think Mary, knows that we need help, and God's gifted them in a way that they know how to help us. And so, Bob, you're writing a blog called UnravelingIslam.com, and if our listeners want to go there, they can begin to peruse some of the articles that you've written. But as Mary's helping you, and you're editing these things, and you're putting these together, maybe walk us through, you told us you're on the mower, and you're in the yard, and I can totally, God likes to speak to me in the shower, and I think he does so because I don't have any writing utensils.
Yeah.
And so you're sitting there and you're going, oh no, and I'm jumping out, which is a funny story, because I think at one of our gatherings I shared that, and somebody bought me soap crayons, and so I could write in the shower. But as you're getting these thoughts and you're coming in and you're beginning to kind of put some form to them and you're beginning to write those out, what kinds of things is God moving in your heart? I mean, if somebody is to go to Unraveling Islam, what kind of things are they going to encounter? And share with us maybe a little bit of what God's laid in your heart pertaining to Islam.
Okay, well, first of all, we all lead very busy lives, and people have jobs, they have families, different ways they volunteer at church and what have you, and for other organizations. And so I know that time really matters. And so these articles are not some big, long treatise you have to read. They're not written for theologians. What they are is they are very crisp and clean articles that go into a specific and particular tenet of Christian or Islamic theology, one little piece, and try to make sense of that and do a comparison. 5 minutes would be a long time to read one of these articles. And when you're done, there's two things that you should come away with. First of all, you're going to think about God in a way maybe that you haven't in a long time. And I'll elaborate more on that in a little bit. When you see who the God of Islam is not, you see a lot more clearly who the God of the universe is. So they have a little bit of that devotional aspect. You should walk away and say, wow, I never really had thought about that characteristic or that who God is in that way before. And secondly, you come away with a little bit more knowledge about Islam itself, where you say, wow, I didn't know that this was in the Islamic writings. I didn't know that Muslims believed this. Or, wow, I wonder how that translates into their daily lives. And so you sort of walk away with that part of it, too.
Yeah. Now, I want to play the character a little bit because I don't know why, but God's had me do this a lot lately, because I think that in order to understand or more powerfully substantiate what God's done in your heart, I want to play the other side of it. So, you know, you went to seminary, Bob, and you probably read a lot of books, and you probably got a degree. Well, you did get a degree. And so, therefore, you know a lot about Islam. But you know what? Have you really gone and talked to Muslims?
Well, of course. It would be very silly to do a lot of writing and research Islamic scholars and not get together with Muslims. And that's one of the things I do, and I wish I had more time to do more of it. And I've made some wonderful friends really all over the world, both over the internet and face-to-face. And what I've found is that a lot of Muslims, when I speak to them, they don't know a lot of the more intricate aspects of their own religion or even sort of what they're told to believe. So that's one of the pieces that I find is that you find out these are just normal people and they don't understand why they don't have peace and why they don't have joy. And they're not going to come out and say that straight away. But as you get to know them, you find out this is the case. One of the things that will happen, too, is as a Christian, when you show unconditional love to a Muslim, that will just rock their world in a way that they can't understand, because they will keep coming back to, why is this person doing this? What do they want in return? What are they after? And so it'll really, really exemplify sort of who Christ is, because it's just hard for them to understand unconditional love.
Yeah, there was Michael Youssef did a talk on Islam for the Jenkins Center for Christian Understanding at Southern Theological Seminary. And in it, he made a statement that I thought was really interesting. Prior to our conversation today, I listened to it in the car on the way over because I wanted to catch it again because it unsettled me. And he says, Islam is advantaged for this day and this place, because it has a firm understanding of territory, of mission, of submission to that mission, and control. And he said Christianity is not advantaged to this world because it lives not of this world. Its kingdom doesn't exist here. It's not home here. And so what he was saying is that, I think what you're saying, and maybe you can help me to understand this, but that when you show unconditional love to a Muslim, there's no strings attached, because your treasure isn't here. Your reward isn't here. You have nothing to gain by that here, but you have everything to gain in heaven in your Father, you know, where moth and rust doesn't decay. And yet a Muslim who looks at that, he says, but wait a second, I so understand mission and domination and territory and all these things. I don't understand why he would be doing this without the prize of gaining any of that.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. And the thing that you said that I really want to come back to is that, yes, Islam is very tailored for advancement in this world. It definitely employs strategies that are well suited to non-spiritual or worldly goals.
Mm. Now, when we come together on Sunday night, August 16th, at the Community Evangelical Free Church, what would be the agenda? What's the goal that you want to teach the Great News Radio listeners, those that are going to attend this evening?
Well, our time is going to be short. There's a lot we could talk about, but we're just going to be real brief, and we're going to talk a little bit about why this matters. We're going to talk a little bit about how Muslims view Christians. I mean, have you ever stopped to think, you know, because we're always thinking, well, gee, you know, how do I interact with this Muslim or, you know, my coworker or my neighbor or what have you? But have you ever stopped to think, well, I wonder how they perceive me?
Mm.
And that's an interesting question in and of itself. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. How do they view Jesus? And then a lot of people hear things about, well, the Quran says this or what have you, and they don't really know. And so we're going to take a look real quick at some of the things that the Quran says and how Muslims establish their worldview. And then we're going to wrap it up by talking about, okay, and what does this mean for us? What do we do? How do we respond to this? And so it'll be a bit of a whirlwind tour, but hopefully, as Jason talked about, it'll be a conversation that will open up many other conversations.
I want to talk to you about something that's particular. In fact, if anybody is my Facebook friends, well, a fair amount of our listeners are my Facebook friends, I posted an article that you had put on called The Crusader Inversion. And you talk about these inversions or these opposites, how Muslim theology is opposite to Christian theology, that what we do is, as you even just said, that when we love them unconditionally, when we love our enemies and we don't repay evil with evil, as the Bible says, that it rocks their world because they don't understand that. So there's this opposite of what they expect us to do. I mean, when they do evil to us, they expect us to repay them with evil. That's just the natural progression of kind of their theological thought. But we don't do that. And so in this inversion, I just thought it was brilliant the way you laid it out. And I would love if you would just even give people, because I think it's a brilliant little caveat to help us to understand, starting with what Claremont did in his speech, the Pope.
Okay, so one of the things that happens is Christians wind up being on the defensive. So you'll talk to a Muslim, or even if you're talking to maybe a nominal Christian or someone who's an unbeliever who says, well, you know, Christians do bad things all the time. Look at the Crusades, for example. And then you sort of sit there and say, well, how do I respond to that? So I did some research, and I found out that if you look at how the Crusades started, the way they started was that in 1095, the Pope came along and said, okay, we're going to free Jerusalem. And in his edict, and I'm paraphrasing here, you can go pull the exact quote off of Unraveling Islam. But paraphrasing, he said, by the way, whoever goes on this mission and dies in battle on the way or while in battle is granted remission of sins as per my purview as Pope. And so, if you just stop and think about that for a moment, what he's saying is, okay, look, if you die in battle, you get to go to heaven. Now, stop for a minute. Now, of course, we can easily say, well, the Bible doesn't say that, and, you know, that's not Christian thinking, and okay, you're right. But back up a little bit. What kind of thinking is that? What religion does teach that dying in battle allows you to go directly to heaven? Well, guess what? That's Islam. And so what happens is, if you stop for a minute to just think about this, what the Pope did in order to start the Crusades was he took a little piece of Islam and he wedged it into Christianity. And the results were disastrous and something we're apologizing for a millennia later. And so I would say, well, if you want to talk about the Crusades, let's talk about a time when Christians tried to be more Muslim.
Which I think really plays into where we're at today in the world, because I think we try and import these things. But I think one of the things you're leaving out, which is the thing that when I got done, I just, you know, I sit on the couch with my wife and I'm reading this and I'm going, yes, yes. And then I go, oh, you've got to hear this. And I say it to her. And as always happens, I'm like, you know, in seventh heaven. And she's like, what did you just say? But you say this. You say, well, so what is the point? Question mark. The point is that the Crusades, and I'm reading this from Bob's blog, Unraveling Islam. The point is that the Crusades started as a result of jihad being declared. Does the Muslim applaud the teaching of jihad or not? This is the question that every Muslim should be asked. If they applaud jihad, then they should not be against the concept of the Crusades, saying that if you applaud jihad, then the Crusades were okay because they're in line with your theological thinking. If they denounce jihad, then they do not follow Islam and can't be Muslim. And so that's fascinating to me because it creates this box there where if the Crusades are bad, then how do you reconcile that against the faith that you claim? But if jihad is bad, how do you reconcile that against the faith you claim? And so when I look at that, I think, oh my gosh.
Well, and so what can happen is you can just have conversations. You don't have to have debates, but you can stop and say, hey, look, as a Muslim, you're against the Crusades. Help me understand why, because this is more like Islam. Now, of course, some Muslims will say, well, no, you know, Islam doesn't really believe in this, and that's a whole other conversation that we can have. But it allows you to have conversations and not debates.
Well, speaking of conversations and conversations that matter, if we've captured your attention or your interest on Sunday night, August 16th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Community Evangelical Free Church in Mahammed, conversations do in fact matter, as we'll be gathering Bob Sievers, our special guest today and yesterday's edition of Mark and Friends, which, by the way, both programs are archived at greatnewsradio.org. But Bob will be facilitating, along with co-host Pastor Jason Schiffo, about equipping Christians to biblically understand Islam and Christianity. Now, you're all invited, and the sooner you can register and let us know so we can have the proper amount of resources and the seating. Hopefully, we're going to outgrow the one multi-purpose upstairs room, and maybe we'll have to be in the sanctuary, but there'll be room for everyone, so you need to register so we can have the resources, and you can call the church at 217-586-5165. That's 217-586-5165. And if Jan doesn't answer, you can't get a hold of someone, there'll be an answering machine. You can leave your name and phone number, and we'll make sure you get registered. But there's another nifty way where you can be kind of linked in. And what's that site, Jason?
Just go to the Great News Radio homepage, and there Mark will have a link for you to click, and that'll take you right to where you
can register. That's right. I had that up yesterday. GreatNewsRadio.org. And after you see the picture of Jason, Joey, and I, right underneath that, there will be a link so you can register right online.
So one of these occurrences, Bob, happened. You relayed, we had lunch together, and you were telling me how you would go to the mosque in Urbana there, and you would listen to, I guess we would call it the sermon.
Correct.
But afterwards, some of the guys would come and they would interact with you, and you told me a story about blessings, and I thought that was a great example of this interaction that was gentle and kind, but also the truth.
Well, on this particular day, I'll call it the sermon, they have an Islamic name for it, but was about how Muhammad was always kind and blessed those around him. That was just one little piece of it. And so afterward, I was standing around with about five or six guys, and I said, okay, guys, help me understand. They said, well, first they said, do you have any questions? And I said, I do, actually. Mm-hmm. One of my questions is, are you familiar with when Muhammad was approached by a Jewish woman, and she said, curse be upon you, or death be upon you. And Muhammad said, and also on you. And Muhammad's wife said, did you hear what she said to you? And Muhammad said, well, yes, did you hear? I returned her greeting back to her. And so they all were familiar with that particular writing, that story. And I said, so help me understand how returning a curse for a curse exemplifies kindness and blessing. Help me understand that. And for the next 3, 4, 5 minutes, I watched these guys all try to figure this out. Hmm. Now, of course, none of them can let on that anything is going wrong, because that's the last thing you do as a Muslim is ever admit that you have any doubts. And by the way, and this is yet another thing when you compare and contrast Christianity and Islam, you know, when we have doubts and we can go cry to God, you know, read some of the Psalms about God, where are you? I mean, God accepts that from us. But in Islam, you cannot do that. And so I'm watching these guys trying to figure this out. And after about 4 or 5 minutes of round and round she goes, the conclusion was, well, we don't really understand how this was kindness, but since we know that Muhammad was the greatest person that ever lived, we know it must have been. And so I said, you know, okay, in my mind, I said, okay, you know, my job here is done. I don't need to go anywhere with this. Yeah. Well, all I need to do now is pray that as these guys go home, that this will resonate with them somehow, that they will stop and ask themselves, wait a minute, why is this kindness? Who is this prophet of Islam that I'm following? And so these are the kinds of dialogue you can have in a way. You have to get the ball rolling. You can't just come in and say, well, let me tell you about Jesus as the Son of God who died for your sins. You can't start there. That's where you're trying to get to. That's not the place you begin.
Yeah, and I think in Western thinking, and you know, I think we have to make the admission, and I've said it many times at different classes that I've done, we think in a Western way. Everything is very linear. 1 + 1 = 2. Every question has an answer. And in Eastern thinking, that isn't quite how the mind works. And so that's why we see in the Bible Jesus asking questions or teaching in such a way that, like you said, they have to go away, and along the way, revelation hits them. Along the way, as they ponder that, and the Spirit of God invades that place of unbelief, disbelief, or not knowing, they go, whoa. Because sometimes a more powerful thing is that we discover that on our own with the Spirit of God versus you simply giving the answer. The Western way, I think, and I think that sometimes the missed approach in that apologetic is just to give the answer and then hope that did its work. But we're speaking to an Eastern person who doesn't necessarily operate quite that way.
And I appreciate you, Bob, how you didn't try to be antagonistic and point out, look at, see, there's a contradiction here, and try to create a conflict with them. You let them think it through,
right,
and you were gentle. Even that verse that we began the program with, we didn't really get to talk about it, but it talks about, you know, being able to share your faith and your love for God, but do this with gentleness and respect. And it seems like as you have built relationships with many Muslims, that you're shedding the light of Christ in a loving way, that fragrance of Christ. Hopefully they're seeing as evident in you, and they're going to ask you some questions.
Right, and that's what you hope for, is that then the questions will start coming. And one of the things they do on Unraveling Islam is also to go into that Eastern way of thinking. And this is something I've learned. If I say to you, A, B, C, D, E, F, what did you just think about? You thought G. I didn't have to tell you G. It came into your mind all by itself. Mm-hmm. And so as you look through Scripture and you see Jesus asking questions, Jesus already knows the answer to the mm-hmm. question he's about ready to ask. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need to ask it. So why does he ask it? Well, he asks it so that the person can think it through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we hope to do, is to really open up some issues and allow people, both Christians who want to understand the difference between Christianity and Islam, and Muslims who want to understand what it is they believe, can start to think these things through.
Yeah, and I think that, as you said already, and I want to close out just maybe by making this statement, that we as Christians don't need to be on the offensive. And in the same way, I don't think that we need to be offensive in how we share with them, how we refute and bring truth. But I think that we just come with the gospel, because the Bible tells us already that the gospel is offensive to those who are perishing. The Bible already lends offense because it uncovers and reveals sin. It convicts where truth isn't present. And so I just want to say, Bob, that I hope many people come out to this conversation. I hope that we fill the room up. I hope that it leads some pathways where you can go and have conversations at their churches, because you're available to be able to do those things.
Yeah, this is what God's called me to do. So.
Yeah, and God has gifted you, clearly. I mean, I would just tell the Great News Radio listeners that, having spent time over lunch and today, and I want to sit beneath Bob's teaching and be able to learn some things from Bob. And I plan to send many emails his way and many phone calls over the hopefully months and years to come, so that I can better understand these issues and I can walk in grace and truth. Because oftentimes I struggle to do that, because I think, just as our inherent need to be right, righteous, and to think we know everything. And sometimes the greatest thing, and one of the things I've appreciated most about you, Bob, is that a lot of your articles on your blog end by saying, and this will create a pathway that we can talk to Muslims. We can share truth.
And that ability to talk to Muslims is something that is becoming more and more prevalent. There are over 10,000 international students currently at the University of Illinois. And if you look at it percentage-wise, Champaign-Urbana has the second highest population of foreign nationals throughout the entire country. Mm-hmm. God has opened a huge door for us, and it is right here in our backyard.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all coming up this Sunday night. I think yesterday I might have said in a couple of weeks. It's just this Sunday, August 16th, 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Community Evangelical Free Church in Mahomet. You can call for more information or to get registered by dialing 217-586-5165, 217-586-5165. And Bob, just briefly, say somebody can't make it this Sunday night to the Conversations Matters class titled Islam and Christianity. Is there a phone number for them to call to maybe talk with you? Because maybe they're thinking, you know, our small group, our large Sunday school class would love to have you come in some Sunday, or maybe some Wednesday night or something. How can they get a hold of you?
Well, they can get a hold of me from my blog. I have a contact link there. Just go to unravelingislam.com. Or if you want to phone me personally, my phone number is area code 217-390-1524. I would love to be able to help you out if you're a pastor or a lay person at a church and wants to understand this but don't have 10 years of your life to invest in investigating Islamic theology.
That's all of us.
Feel free to give me a ring.
Okay, that's Bob Sievers at 217-390-1524. But better yet, come in person this Sunday night, August 16th, at the Community Evangelical Free Church, beginning at 6 p.m. Well, gotta go. SRN News won't wait. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.